a year ago, which is crazy. And you said that a lot of the things that were being decided would be done in the editing room, so you actually decided on a few fakes, some of the characters, and you know, whether or not it's apparent that, you know, we're having to go and so on. Have you decided that? Have things changed?
We are probably 95% done with our cut.
Yeah.
So we're getting very close. And so, yes.
Have things evolved now where you thought they would? Have
they
gone in a different direction?
No. And it's one of the things, I mean, you know, it's pretty tricky when you're doing a film like this to just make it up as you go along.
Right.
Because it's so driven by this combination of the performances and the visual effects that if you're changing your mind every 5 minutes, you're going to make people completely crazy and waste a lot of money. So the main thing that happens in the editing is really just, usually it's tightening it up.
Right.
You know, you thought you needed this in the scene, and then you realize, well, wait a minute, I don't need that line because just that actor's reaction is giving me what I need. So I can lose that line. Which when you're writing the script, you think, well, I better have this, doesn't make sense. But the beautiful thing about, you know, that everybody says you make a film kind of three times. You write the script, then you kind of work on making the movie and little things shift and change as you work with the actors. And then when you get in the editor room, you look at it again. And it's about finding the right pace and saying, did we really need this scene or didn't we? And so I'm pleased to say there's only a couple of scenes that we've been cut from what we shot.
Right.
And pretty much that script is what we made, and we're in a good space. If I sound slightly hesitant, it's because until I finally lock that picture, I'm not quite done.
In that same vein, does that affect how you're doing a sequel? I don't know if that's a waste of my time to ask.
No, you can ask Bob, because he's, you know, Bob Orsi about it. But
Bob will say,
yeah.
I don't count my sequels before they happen.
I know, and I will go with Bob, because the fact of the matter is that's basically what the studio is saying.
Yeah.
And until the studio says, we're going to write you a check, and you've got to stop doing
it. I understand that, but
so, some thoughts for sequels?
Yeah.
Sure. But this, the reason Bobby is cautious, and this is the boring business part of movies, is there's a large amount of money at stake, and we would need the approval of studio to go ahead.
It's
very
hard to convey to fans the boring part of movies.
That's why we're not going to even put this in the fan. Cut this part out.
No,
I think that's why Bob's saying, listen, I think that's why he's giving you that soundbite line,
which is,
you know, we don't count up chickens before. Because the truth, oh, no, I completely, but the truth is, we just don't have the go. If we had been said, you're making a sequel, we'd be able to tell you, but we don't have that. And if there's nothing worse than saying, we're making the sequel, then that's out, then, oh, we're not making the truth is, he's not lying. He's actually telling you the truth. He's putting a spin on it by saying we don't count our chickens, but the fact is we do not have sequel yet because this property, I think the truth is, this property is something that, you know, people wanted to make for a long time and didn't, couldn't, wouldn't. And so I think everybody's a little bit in shock that we've actually made it. And they go, and now there might be a little bit of shock. I think they're in a little bit of shock in a good way that the fans responded so well to what they saw, which is great for me. So thank you guys. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Hey, bud.
Hello.
So you came in just in time.
We were talking about you.
They were talking about you and saying, I wonder what Bob would say if he asked the question, would there be a sequel?
And
there you go.
Correct.
That's
true.
She's good.
They're mass hatched.
Anyway.
So. I have a question.
Yes.
Good.
What steps have you taken in the writing and the directing of this film to show Ender's vulnerable side? Because I know that's something that really happens in Ender's head in the book, so what steps have you taken to show that on screen?
That's a great question. Let me try and think. I mean, as we were talking earlier about what you need is actors who are truly able to deliver nuance and good reaction to a situation, so let's just take but one example. When he plays the mind game in the book, which is in the movie, and he's sort of horrified that his brother appears in his game, you know, he snaps out of that moment and he's truly shaken. And then, after that, when he's trying to sleep, I mean, there's a shot where he's lying there and you hopefully can just feel the tension in him, and I'm going to act it very badly if I try, so I won't. But he's, you know, so and you linger on that moment and you just track up this kid who's lying there, and I believe you will feel, wow, this kid is in shock. He's feeling vulnerable, and he hasn't said a word, and it's just visual storytelling. I mean, letting the actor do his thing, letting the moment happen, and hopefully that moment will convey to an audience exactly what the written word said in the book, and delay in his bed, feeling the strain and the loneliness of whatever it was. I can't remember the words, but words to that effect. And that's the visual language against the written language. Yeah.
And at the same time, how do you plan, or if you plan, on redeeming Peter's character and Valentine's character, because they both seem very one-sided at the beginning of the book, and then you come to realize that they're multi-dimensional characters at the end
in
of the book.
Yes, in the sequel. They become very multi-dimensional in the sequel. I'm teasing. But I'm half-teasing, because I think the fact of the matter is we had to make a choice in this book, about in this movie, about what was going to stay to fit into a two-hour movie and what we're going to have to let go. And the main decision that we made was that we would stick with Ender Wiggin, never do a scene without him. Any scene that happened without him, the only ones we chose to do were a couple of scenes with Graf and Anderson where they talk about him, so that the audience is truly on Ender's journey in order to bond you visually and cinematically with this lead character and identify with him. And so we haven't got a whole lot of ensemble pieces about Peter and Valentine together writing the blogs. That's what I'm going to ask for forgiveness for. But also I think Bob and I felt that the blogging was so original in 85 and it's not so original now. So it was the easiest part to shed with the least guilt. And so the only time you see Valentine and Peter is when they're interacting with Ender, which of necessity means their roles are not that substantial, not as substantial as they were in the book.
Now, I remember, like, she asked me a question last May, and you said something about you showed Peter's vulnerable side in, like, one specific scene with Valentine and Peter.
Yes.
Is that something where Ender's present, or is it something, I mean, I don't think that would be something in the beginning.
No, you're asking a great question, and this is one of those things that she was asking earlier about the editing and where's the editing at. We're not finished editing yet, but that is one of those scenes where you suddenly go away from Ender. And even though it's nice for me, I loved seeing this vulnerable moment. It's like a behind-the-scenes version we're doing now. Now we're doing the bloody deleted scenes on the DVD all of a sudden. What the hell is this? But it's going to be fun to talk about that. It's like, is it stopping the narrative through line, you know, the journey you're on with Ender? We can say, whoops, are we really care about these two at the moment? I want to know what's going to happen to Ender. Right. So that's part of this fine-tuning in the editing process that we're involved with right now. Yeah.
Do you have any time? Any kind of idea? You have 2 hours?
Oh, yeah, probably a little short of 2 hours.
PG-13?
Yes. Right on that edge. Boom! He still speeds up Stilson, don't worry.
I'm excited to see that. I'm trying to figure out. I feel like the sequels thing is so bizarre. Like, I'm trying to figure out, because, like, you have these two completely different plot lines, and if you cut Ender, it's not Ender's Game anymore. You have sequels, and all the rest of the kids go off and do something else on Earth.
I mean, it's very... That's, you know, that. But that's the point. That's one of the reasons I think we're reluctant to even talk about it, because until we get some serious decision about whether we're doing it, what exactly are we doing for the sequel? We've talked about it, but we don't want to talk about it because they haven't agreed to do anything. Don't know where we stand.
Yeah, let's see if folk like this one.
Yeah,
if
it's really
if there's an appetite for more.
We like the trailer.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Well, we'll make you another trailer. Oh,
that we can do.
That we can do. Thank you.
For a PG-13 movie, there's obviously a certain amount of violence that you might have had to cut from the film. So, I heard a little rumor. I don't know if it's true. Maybe you can confirm. Is it going to be clear to the audience that Ender kills Stilson?
That's a great question. How do I answer that, Bob?
It'll be clear to those who will open their eyes and see.
See, the same question as the concept, because, like, I know he's, like, in the infirmary, he's going to film or whatever, and, I mean, I think that whether or not he's dead has a lot to do with, like, sequels later, like, if he's still alive, then obviously there's, like, great film potential.
We will say this, you neither know nor don't know whether Bonzo is alive or dead, and Ender, I'll give you one line, and Bob will slap me if I do. He says, he's going to die, isn't he, to Graf. And Graf says no, and Ender doesn't believe Graf. And we leave it at this moment like that. So, but it's a great question, because, you know, we're walking a very fine line in a PG-13 world, and we want it to be PG-13. This was this terrible thing about this damn rating system, right? It makes me crazy. Because you can't have it an R movie where half the people who love the book can't see the movie. And yet you also, you know, don't want to sort of soften it up. So it's a tough thing. I mean, I think we've walked this line very well. I'm very pleased with the fact that, you know, Stilson and the beating he gives to Stilson is still there. But we don't want to, I mean, I'm talking to you guys, we don't want to put parents off sending their kids to see the movie either, so help us here. you know? Hey, Bobby, save me from myself. I'm,
yeah, you're a parent, you care.
No, I care.
You got kids, right?
Yes. And I was saying earlier that when with the violence in the movie, we never wanted to indulge the violence for the sake of violence. This is actually, I think, a helpful borderline. We wanted the violence to happen for you to feel the shock of it in a real way, but more importantly, for you to deal with the aftermath of the violence, right?
Right, the reactions to it.
What is really shocking about violence is not the moment of violence. You have the shock, oh my God. Now, we're talking inside of your spoilers, right? He does this thing that you guys who've read the book know to Bonzo in the shower scene.
Right.
And then it's like, oh my God, what have I done? And now we're watching Bonzo in the infirmary. What is going to happen to Bonzo? What have I done? It's the impact on Ender of the action. I don't need to stand there and punch Bonzo 55 times in the teeth. That's horrible, indulgent, and not necessary. Believe me, in the movie, you will get a real big
shock
in that moment
this.
With Bonzo. That I know.
Hey!
Hey, guys!
Yeah.
Oh,
make yourself at home.
I wish I was.
Come on
that.
In, guys. We were just chewing
it's
the fat,
a
killing
warm.
Time.
No,
I know, trust me. I'm Haley, by the way.
Come on in, Haley, by the way.
Thanks.
Is Asa coming, by the way?
Video?
Or
we asked
him.
Yeah,
why aren't you ready?
I really. I know.
That's it. You know, you learned about
it.
Don't do that.
Right?
Yeah. Doctor.
Don't let
you. Come
on.
Don't do that.
Obviously,
okay.
That's fine. You're fine. Sure? Yeah.
Don't do that.
Life lessons.
Do you want to say something?
You.
I'm
one
minute.
Okay.
Yeah, look.
Give me 15 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Hello!
Hi, Philip! What's the field?
Thank you.
Okay.
Make yourself at the home.
Make yourself at home.
Hi.
How are you?
In the bathroom.
Hello.
So far away, because they're going to pull me in 5 minutes, apparently. I'm not quite sure why, but.
They're done talking
okay,
about
Nana.
Anyway.
A question for you.
Question.
A few of the actors, including Harrison Ford and Viola Davis, have said that they didn't read the book.
Yes.
What advice did you give them to help portray the characters fans know and love?
I gave them the script. And I'm only half joking. I think that there is some... no, really, obviously, I gave them the script. And
thank
then
you.
We had really extensive conversations about the scenes that they're going to be playing in that movie. Their feeling was to engage in conversations about scenes that are not in the movie isn't helpful. They need to know that what's on that page in the script, which is going to be on screen, is going to have sufficient weight and substance and merit to give them fully rounded characters in the movie. It's no good saying, hey, I want to talk about all this stuff in the book, it's not in the movie. Well, then what's the point of talking about it, because you're taking that away from my character. So there's a lot of actors who don't want to read books. Some do. These guys use the book as a form of research, and fantastically so. Other actors say, wait a minute, we're not making the book. You're asking me to play the role based on this script. This script better have enough substance and weight and nuance for me to feel that my character is going to be nuanced. And that was their approach, which I think is absolutely fine. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And a question that I'm sure we've all been having to answer lately. There's been... You already know what I'm going to ask.
Are they dating? Are they going to get married?
Yes.
In the
yes.
movie? They're holding hands and that's still,
yeah.
Yeah.
Don't say when they're in the
room.
By the
way, you do, right?
Let's have our first story meeting here. What's it?
So, what's the question?
Should they get married in the sequel?
Are you in love?
Is there a teen romance in this movie?
It might be. It might not be. How do you answer this? You these guys are looking for spoilers here.
How did you play it in your mind?
Yeah.
I think what's really interesting. Go ahead. I'm like, well, let me answer that.
It is interesting because Ender and Petra. It's not. I wouldn't call it a love relationship or anything close to a.
I'm kidding.
Close to her.
She'll let me answer.
But
yeah.
I wouldn't say it was anything. At all like a love relationship, because they're both dependent on each other for support.
Like an anchor.
They're both in the same situation. They're both not entirely accepted by their by the community that
guys just don't get it, man.
No,
just
gosh, what are you saying? No, it's so true. I think that it's sort of expected in a way, and what's so great about the relationship between them is not only is it, you know, did I not really see it as sort of a romance thing, but I don't think the characters do either. I think they're looking for a friend, and they're looking for somebody to trust and feel comfortable with, and that doesn't necessarily mean boyfriend, girlfriend, or whatever, however you want to
put. No, I think you express it very well. I mean, they're in this battle school, which is pretty brutal, but what I do like about the way what they created as actors is there is genuine tenderness between these two characters at certain moments. And there's genuinely sweet moments when she teaches him how to shoot. It's both exciting and really tender. But it's not, let's be cuties.
Right.
None of that. None of that. None of us wanted that. No.
Do
it's just not. No.
Do you think that by fostering this relationship, friendship between Ender and Petra, that you've softened Petra's hard character? Because she has such a stern character in the novel.
I think that there's a great, you know, when Ender comes around and they're sort of introduced to each other, there's something in the connection that sort of just sort of speaks for itself in a way that when you're introduced to Petra, you see her in a state that's, she's under the commander's rule. She's doing everything she needs to do. She's doing what she has to do to get things done. And Ender comes along, and she sees a lot of herself in him when she first started out, sort of being the only girl and being an outcast. And our commander looking at Ender as, he's not good enough, he's not this, having this sort of thing, you know, that a girl would be sort of getting. So there's this sort of connection, this instant connection that I would say sort of softens the character because she feels that she's not alone.
But she's really badass in the movie.
Yeah.
She is badass and does some amazingly badass things. But here's what's great about your question is we are not all one thing. And just because she kicks ass and is badass and takes out half of that army, which we shouldn't give away and so on, as she does in the book, doesn't mean that there's not a need for friendship.
Right.
And both of these characters, as you so beautifully put it, are isolated and tough because they're kind of outsiders. And there's a really couple of nice moments in the movie where we find, okay, to hell with all these other people. We're going to go out in the battle room and train. And there's something genuine about that. There's nothing cutesy about it. There's nothing sort of, oh, let's have a little love story. There's none of that. But there's something, dare I say, a certain romance to that.
Yes, there is.
Which is beautiful in a real way, and they play it in a real way. They don't play it.
I think for fans, it's weird because they compare the book to the movie, but then you think you've aged these kids up, and let's just be serious. You have a bunch of teenage kids.
That's exactly right.
Like a billion miles above Earth in a boarding school.
Yeah.
Let's not pretend like they're not going to form connections. You know,
thank
doesn't
you.
Necessarily have to.
But that's very well put. That's
but
exactly what it is.
It's like a bunch of teenagers in a boarding school together. What are they? I mean, it's
of
a
course.
Completely different scenario than 7-year-old Ender and, you know, 9-year-old.
You've put it
beautifully
right. And that's exactly why we needed those moments where.
Right.
Should we do our little silly thing? I know I'm embarrassing.
Okay, sure.
Okay. So there's these guys have never seen this before. There's a wonderful
moment.
This is how
we sold the movie.
Yeah, we sold the movie by like this. We went.
And then there's
this. Like, there's this moment where Ender, who is a 13-year-old boy, not a 7-year-old thing, is being taught by Petra to shoot. And she comes up and she says, come on, straighten up. And there you go. That's better. And just for a moment, his eyes.
Where
and
were you when
flick
you
in them.
But that has to happen. It's so unrealistic.
Exactly.
He's
no, it has to happen.
Old,
it
right?
happens. And you remember how I said, we just need that. She's touching my arm. That's cool.
We did that
I'm
in front of six
shooting.
Studio heads.
And we did that, yeah. He and I would demonstrate together. See how you touch and then he has us. Okay, we're floating and off you go. There you go. Well, of course, you got. If you don't have that, then I love the way you put it. Then you're totally BSing what happens with a certain level of hormones. That doesn't mean we've got a big love story.
Speaking of love stories, we have
I
a
do,
really
I adore
cute
him.
Photo of you guys last night on the
yes.
Barracks.
Oh,
you're
holding
hands. He's lying there. It's the cutest picture we have.
Okay.
I'm going to put it up.
Okay.
I called it a romance.
It's really cute.
Yeah.
Oh my god, here we go.
There's one where you're holding up the helmet like Hamlet.
Oh god.
We just haven't had time to like
film
that.
We're so dead.
It's just we thing, Kimosabi.
So I have a question that's kind of related to what we've just been talking about. Like, you said something really important to me yesterday, outside the fan experience, that this movie, the way you've done it, is not just about spectacle, that it's about relationships, and that's what you were really focusing on. And I mean, I'm just kind of curious for all of you, what was the relationship that meant the most to you in developing with one of the other actors, one of the other characters? Like, you know, you have to show, you know, Ender with Graf, Ender with Petra, Ender with which relationship was most, whether it was fun or exciting or just intense for you to develop?
I mean, all of the relationships are unique in the film.
Yeah.
And there's, of course, all the relationships in real life. I have completely different relationships with everyone, all the cast. And we're all so close. And in the film, you have to show the, like, for example, what we were just talking about with Ender and Petra's relationship is what we just said. But, we explored it, and
I think you've all unearthed what this is. Whatever relationship you're dealing with at that moment in the movie, if it's these two kids together, and they're the age that they are, you cannot pretend there isn't some sort of chemistry happening. It's great. Because otherwise it just looks like we're a bunch of sort of, you know, hormoneless machines, which we're not. But at the same time, it's perfectly possible to have that moment, but know that they know that this is not allowed. And
right.
So they're not trying to push anything.
Right.
And even if they wanted to, we'll save it for the sequel. So I love the fact that Petra is tough in this movie, but there's a moment when there's two of you together where you have to. I would have said, what are you doing? You don't notice that she's holding your arm? You got to notice that. And then in the relationship with him and Graf, it's another dynamic. And
right.
What is that dynamic? Is this a kind of, you know, mentor-son thing, or is this too brutal to be a mentor? And just play off the truth of each scene as it comes.
Yeah.
Okay, so I had a question for you. You recently said in an interview that there was nothing of Ender's shadow in Ender's Game, and it was a little debated because we didn't know if you just misspoke, and I'm just wondering if that's the case. I don't know whether or not it is. Like, where are you drawing Dean's storyline from? Like, if it's similar to Ender's shadow, like, is he in the know of what's going on, whereas Ender is sort of, like, in the dark about everything.
All I can say is in this one we adapted Ender's Game, book, because the attempt to adapt two books, which had been tried at Warner Brothers, had been too much. I mean, as it is, it's painful for all of us as fans to lose stuff from Ender's Game.
Right.
Now you want to jam two books together into a two-hour experience?
Not,
oh my god,
it
was just too impossible.
In my opinion, it's not two different books. I like, consider it like a story.
Well,
they're
parallel
stories.
Right,
just wondering, like, if you are developing Dean's character, if it's like fully from Ender's Game, like the way Ender sees him, or if there's like characteristics.
I really can answer you as simply and honestly. It's only the extent to which Ender interacts with Bean. Because that was the point. Even though they're the same story, they're not the same story. The one is the story about Bean and his experience. The one is of Ender. And when you try to do both those stories, you end up with 2 1-hour versions of each person as opposed to a 2-hour version of his experience.
Right.
And we meet Bean only insofar as he bumps into Ender.
Right.
Because we stay with Ender. And that was the only way I could take 2 hours and give as much of Ender's Game to the movie. Every time we try to break it away, it's like, well, something's got to go. You bring Bean in here. What scene do you want to take away from Ender? So that's a very deliberate choice that I think we were right to make.
I agree.
Yeah. Good question, though.
Before we lose you, before someone pulls you out of here, I have a question. What advice, if any, have you given to the composer of this film? We haven't heard much about the score. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
You want it to be a classic score, but also modern, because you want to reflect the fact that it is a future, and it's a nice future. And so you kind of want to mix a mix of modernity, but a classic sense of it, and you want to use it to try and get some of the emotion that is in the book. You have the advantage of knowing so much because you're in the characters' heads, and so to really echo the emotion that the actors brought to the film, and you know, in the audience's mind, link some of those themes to the situations that they're going through, so that after they've after you love what you've heard in the music because of it, because of them feeling it, next time you hear that cue, maybe you feel, you know, you're taken back to what they were going through. That's kind of...
Yeah, that's really what score does really well, is it underscores where, or supports the emotional scene. And sometimes you want score to get out of the way when the scene is very nuanced, because it can really only give you one emotional through line at that moment.
For example, Graf is trying not to show emotion. He's trying not to be too compassionate to his soldiers. So music can help you actually evoke that struggle within him, so that he doesn't give away the game when he's trying to be rough, you know.
Is what we've been hearing in the clips, for example, that Harrison Ford, Welcome to Battle School video, is that Jablonski, or?
Yeah, I asked Ryan, he didn't even know that.
Do you guys know, like?
It is Jablonski.
It is?
Yeah.
Jablonski. Go on, what?
I feel like we're going to lose you.
No.
Well, actually, I had a question for you.
It is.
Just keep going. We're not losing.
There's just one of the ones I could think of that I hadn't heard anyone ask you yet. I'm curious, the American accent. How?
That's a good one. No one's asked that.
Choosing a British actor for this role, like, how was it for you? I mean, you know, TV.
Oh, he picked me.
It's my fault, yeah.
How was that?
It was quite fun. Before when I started auditioning for it, I'm not sure how great my accent was, but we had an amazing dialect coach, Jess Platt, on the film, who worked with me pretty much every day, and I think within a couple of weeks, I don't have the best input on it, because I can't speak my own accent, but some people thought I was an American when I did it, which was good enough, but
things with L's and R's.
Being around people with the American accent was also very helpful.
Do you practice, like, a
you guys, I'm sorry, one question.
I'm in the shower sometimes.
Now, that's a great line. Right on the internet then. Some people sing in the shower, Asa practices the American accent.
Didn't you know that when you found out you got the role of Ender, you were in the bath? And so it's kind of like going on.
I'd just woken up and I was on the plane to do the press tour for Hugo.
No, in the bath is a better story.
We could recreate the moment now.
I guess it's out there now.
No, it's out there. You were in the bath.
Once
I like that
on
story.
The internet, it can't be taken off.
Yeah.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Would it be possible to get a photograph? I don't know if that's asking too much.
Silly photograph.
And then it's possible.